All right, Borna, you and me breaking it down. Welcome to Hockey Central, bottom of the hour. Chris Johnston from Headlines and Sportsnet.ca. We'll be stopping by to talk about tonight's Maple Leafs matchup against the Calgary Flames and trade deadline. Meantime, Borna, we'll get to the Montreal victory over the Maple Leafs last night, 4-2. The effort from the Maple Leafs. But we should park a good chunk of time here in advance of CJ popping down to sort of get your thoughts on what we saw yesterday on trade deadline day, which as the years go on, I mean, once upon a time, that day was a huge day. Like that was a day where GMs were making moves and they were using the time they had. But just now it seems that everybody makes their moves. And of course, there's always a couple of surprises and a couple of big moves. Anthony Mantha, Washington, we're looking your direction. But it seems more and more like trade deadline day has become, how shall we say this, pretty light lately?
Yeah. Hi, Jeff, by the way, before I stutter myself into a coma.
Hey, it's better than a nosebleed like Christopher Stieg yesterday. By the way, how about that? Starts the show with a nosebleed.
That's a very Justin Bourne thing to happen. I am a high-risk nosebleed at all times. That's hilarious. I reached out to Sportsnet Stats to find out about trade deadline activity since 1979-80. So we're looking at the last 40 years of activity. The 80s, right. Trade deadline day and the sort of the 48 hours around it, almost nothing happened. Like in 1983, there was one trade at deadline day. That whole decade, very little happened. The next 30 years, you can see it tick up from there. To almost a climax sort of in the early 2000s. You're right, Jeff, where it was like 25 trades pretty much every year. And then things kind of petered off. Last year, we did have 32. We had 32 deals last year. So last year was pretty absurd. But you're right, this year it went way, way down, half as much, like 17 trades, just 26 players moved on deadline this year.
And see, the one thing that... I'm doing a very poor job of hyping up, tune in for our trade deadline coverage here. the one thing that I do wonder about is how much a flat cap, and the flat cap is, of course, this year, and we're going to have a flat cap for a few seasons now. I do wonder how much a flat cap puts a damper on trade deadline now for the next few seasons.
Oh, it's definitely going to be down. I mean, but I imagine we're always going to be, from now on, somewhere around this number, where we had 17 trades. 3 years ago, there was 18. 4 years ago, there was 18. Like, I think that number is kind of going to be the way it is, because there's always, call it a half dozen teams who think they have a chance, who have to get better and have to make a couple of moves. That's what we saw this year. I think we saw four or five teams that thought they have a chance, and a few teams that thought they had to be sellers, and they were the only ones who did much at all.
Yeah, but break it down from your point of view. Like, how did you look at, and it's not just the day, because it's also the Sunday where we saw some whoppers, the Saturday, the week before. I mean, you can make the argument that Marc Bergevin, for him, trade deadline started the day that, his Montreal Canadiens lost to the Philadelphia Flyers in the bubble, and then he rolled up his sleeves and started to get to work. But how do you break down this year's edition of trade deadline? What do we call it? Trade deadline zone. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, I think we saw the teams, the smart teams supplemented their depth. You saw the Tampa Bay Lightning got, David Savard on D. And I think
Freddie Claesson, yeah.
Yeah, and Julien Brisebois said, like, in a playoff run, you can use up to 10 defensemen. So they're trying to shore up their depth. You saw Colorado get stronger with Devan Dubnyk showing up their goaltending depth, and then they added Patrick Nemeth as well.
Carl Soderberg's a nice pickup. I think that's a real smart move.
So those are all guys to me, Jeff, that like make your team like, 1% better. But when you're already in the elite echelon of teams, 1% is a big deal. So those teams made a lot of sense. Toronto, obviously, is in the same boat where they improved in a whole ton of places to give themselves a real chance. So the good teams were pretty smart. And then you saw teams like Detroit and Chicago who said, this isn't our year. Let's grab as many picks as we can. And they clearly, Detroit in particular, grabbed a ton of picks and clearly stated that their cup window is not for another 3 years or so by moving off from Anthony Mantha.
So how did you see that trade? Let's get into that one, because that was, Jeff Carter was a surprise to many. But the Anthony Mantha, Jacob Vorana, Richard Ponick, a first and a second deal. was a pretty big shocker, I think, for everybody yesterday, and that includes insiders and quote-unquote people in the know. How do you break down that deal?
Well, again, just like it's so smart for Detroit. Like Anthony Mantha, do you happen to know his age offhand? Maybe he's 25, somewhere in that ballpark.
I think he's a 95. Hang on a second here. So Anthony Mantha is a... he's a 94. Sorry, 94. So he's 26 years old.
26, 27. So whenever it is Detroit wants to win the Cup, he's going to be 30 years old. And all of a sudden, you're paying a lot for a guy to be with your team when you don't think that you're going to be contending. So what's the point, really? I mean, they moved on from him and got a great return in a first-round pick, a second-round pick, a guy in Jacob Vrana, who's a good player now. He's going to help the team now as well. It's maximizing your assets. Detroit did a really nice job, I thought, with that. And for the Washington Capitals, oh boy, here's a huge man who can score goals, and some of the questions about him being motivated may go away when all of a sudden the games matter, you know?
So I looked at this one. So Ellie and I talked about this on the podcast that just came out. So we sort of split hairs on where the picks go. But here's how I see this deal. So I saw the Washington-Detroit deal as actually two deals. So I phrase it this way. There's Anthony Mantha for Jacob Vrana. Now, Anthony Mantha is 26 years old. Jacob Vrana is 25 years old. Their numbers are staggeringly similar. Like, it's remarkable to the point where I think they've both, hang on, let me check this. They've both scored 11 goals this season. They both had seasons where they've been in the mid to high 20s for goal production. You know, high 40s, low 50s for points. Like, their numbers are similar. Like, they're a more similar player than they are different if you just go by your traditional or as they call them, boxcar stats. So I look at that and say, okay, that's one deal that's happening here. But there's very much a secondary deal that's happening here. And this is where I really got to give it to Steve Yzerman. Now, he has the ability to do this because of ownership. But the second deal in this is the Detroit Red Wings taking Richard Ponick's contract and also picking up a first and a second. Like, I look at the Ponick side of this and the draft picks and say, that's Washington saying, can you help us make some cap space here? We'll attach in a first and second to it in order to enable that. So it looks like one big deal, but to me, it's really two deals disguised as one. Does that work for you?
It works for me. You know, maybe how I would distribute those picks would be a little different. Like, I don't think anyone in the league thinks Jacob Vrana has Anthony Mantha's value.
So that's why I think Elliot said that he would say it's Jacob Vrana and a second in exchange for Anthony Mantha. Richard Panik and a first goes to the Detroit Red Wings.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense to me. Man, Richard Panik gets a lot of people to pay him. we had him in the American League and, like, didn't particularly love the player there. It's funny someone else has to deal with him. But anyway,
what Detroit has done is essentially they bought a first-round pick.
Yes. And so do you have an owner that's willing to do that? I don't think every owner, particularly in a pandemic, is willing to spend money to buy draft picks. But you know, we saw it in San Jose, you know, brokering deals, taking on money in exchange for assets. And it's, to me, if you own an NHL team, you mentally have to be committed to spending $81.5 million on salary. That's part of the deal to me. And so it makes perfect sense if you have that room to gain assets for just the cash. I think that's just really smart use of your salary cap and how to acquire assets. The Toronto Maple Leafs, I think this is going to be a much bigger thing in the future. Teams using cap space and using third parties, because everyone's struggling with the salary cap as it is.
Can you see anybody grousing about it?
Yeah, of course.
And throwing up the this is cap circumvention, even though it's not. Like, I remember when the first CBA was was put together, and I can't remember who the first to do it. I think the Kiprasov deal might have been the first one that had the dead seasons at the end. Like, the contract goes like 6-6-6-6-6-1, right at the very end, just to get the AAV down. And technically, it didn't contravene the salary cap at all. But what it did, you know, there's a little clause in there about the spirit of the salary cap, which pretty much gives the NHL and whatever arbitrator they want to name to preside over these things a pretty wide brush to paint over things that we just frankly don't like. And I wonder if anybody grouses about this, the fact that, and Elliot calls him the bag man, like there's a third party that's going to hold some of the money, pick up a draft pick in the process, and essentially just be there to hold cash to facilitate a trade. You mentioned San Jose with the Maple Leafs and the Columbus Blue Jackets. The bag man there is Doug Wilson, who holds some of the purse and gets a fourth-round draft pick in the process. Do you think anybody grouses about this, you know, not really in keeping with the spirit of the CBA and the intention of the salary cap?
Yeah, I can see it, but like I find it really hard to be sympathetic towards that case. Like it, to me, it's like, hey, I stop those other teams from intelligently using their assets. You know, like it's like a jealousy thing. Like they didn't think of it first or something like that. If anyone has the audacity to complain about it, like everyone is set with the same parameters and the CBA gets handed out to everyone just the same. And then it's on teams. It's incumbent on those general managers and owners to figure out how to get the most out of it. And, You know, this is a really creative, smart way to do it. It takes communication, which I think old school GMs would say is one of the most important attributes of a GM is communicating with people. And it would take a lot of communication to facilitate deals like this. So I think it's just a credit to management when you can make it happen. And again, now that it's more commonplace, I think we do see it a ton. Does that mean the NHL eventually gets involved? Oh, probably, because no one likes fun, but I think it makes a lot of sense.
Well, I do wonder now, because, I mean, how many years do you figure the salary cap is going to be flat?
Well, probably another three seasons.
Four seasons?
Hopefully not that.
Right? I mean, we're all crossing our fingers here and hoping that not just the hockey economy, but the economy proper, you know, comes back and, you know, rebounds quickly after all of this. But we don't know. I mean, everyone's still heading into an unknown. Considering how flat the salary cap is going to be, I think you're going to see a lot more short-term deals. And I think you're going to see, as we just mentioned off the top, relative inactivity around trade deadline and more bag men. Like, I think this is just going to be the reality of how deals are done. Like, how are we going to make this deal? Well, we got to get a third party involved. But, I mean, this isn't the first time we've seen this. Like, we've seen this done before, just not the volume of it.
How about the other thing with this, Jeff? The other rise that we're seeing in the salary cap is the awareness of there being no salary cap in the postseason. And teams like do you think Kucherov got his surgery knowing he could be back for playoffs? I kind of do. You know, the Toronto Maple Leafs and Freddie Anderson, all of a sudden he has this injury. Yeah. You know?
Listen,
teams doing this?
Chicago Blackhawks won a Stanley Cup. You know, Pat Kane stayed out. That allowed the Chicago Blackhawks to pick up a number of players, including Antoine Vermette from the Arizona Coyotes, which greatly helped them solidify their center position and helped them win a Stanley Cup just because Pat Kane was on long-term. Did he need to be on long-term as he was? I'm not his doctor. There's enough smoke around it to kind of look at it and at least have a chin scratch about it, right?
Well, yeah, and in particularly with injuries like Freddie, which is, it doesn't feel right. You know, like how do you quibble with that? Like you get into a medical professional in there and be like, yeah, it looks good or whatever. And it's like, yeah, but it doesn't feel right. How do you tell him otherwise? How do you say he's not hurt? You can't.
No, I just got out of bed and my back just feels, I don't know. It's weird, Doc. I don't know.
It's like structurally it looks good, but hey, Doc, it feels bad.
What's going on there? I don't know. Maybe take a little more time. do a couple of deals then. What surprised you? Like which one jumped out at you and you went, really didn't see that one coming?
Well, the Mantha one for sure. I think that's probably the obvious answer. I'd say the other big surprise was Taylor Hall going for what he went for. And, you know, it took some thinking about it. I understand it is that the guy who held a lot of the cards here is Taylor Hall. And if he says he'll play for two teams and you've talked to the two teams and they'll tell you what they give you, you know, I was like, why would they not wait till the deadline? You know, why not? And it's like, well, if Taylor Hall's going to go one of two places and you know what they're going to give you, what's the point?
Yeah.
So it surprised me that he went for as little as he went for.
It is true. That's one of the things. And A couple of minds here. I mean, listen, Kevin Adams and the Buffalo Sabres did the contract to begin with, and you can't fault the player at all. I know Brian Lawton really didn't like this on NHL Network, former NHL general manager, but, I mean, this is the way the contract was agreed to. Taylor Hall had the hammer, had the no-trade clause, and was able, essentially, to dictate where he was going to go. And I have no problem with the player doing that. You know, I hate the word fair, to be blunt, Justin. I really think that that word does a lot of damage to people, not just in sports, but elsewhere, because it unrealistically raises expectations about how things are going to be. You know, like, go to your dictionary right now and go to the section, go to the page where the word, the definition for fair is, and just rip it out and throw it away. Your life will be much better. Trust me. You don't get what's fair. You get whatever you negotiate. And this is what Taylor Hall and his agent, Darren Ferris, were able to negotiate with the Buffalo Sabres. So they held the hammer. Even Taylor Hall mentioned this when he was interviewed after the trade. And he said, you know, my no trade clause, you know, helped me get to Boston. Essentially telling everybody, look, there was only one place I was going to go. And I had the ability that if I was going to get moved, I had the ability to go where I was going to choose. And it was Boston.
Yeah, and, you know, you can be upset about that as a Sabres fan or as the Sabres ownership, but you don't get Taylor Hall without that. You know, he doesn't. If he can't go where he wants to go, if he doesn't wield some say over where he's playing, he wasn't going to choose the team. So, you know, that you had him in the first place and were able to turn him into a player in a second-round pick is because you offered him the no-move clause. So there's your fairness because, you know, he, you know, if you like the word or not, you got something where you had nothing because you were able to convince him to come there.
The question then becomes of Taylor Hall, does he stay with the Boston Bruins? Like, he gave every indication that, you know, he would like to remain there. Like, this was his desire. I mean, to me, one of the great questions for Taylor Hall, and we'll probably never know the answer, and because, quite frankly, I don't know if politically it's smart for him to ever answer the question honestly publicly, but if you go back to his draft year, remember the whole Taylor-Tyler conversation? Mm-hmm. Right, who was going to pick first? I mean, the Edmonton Oilers were picking first overall. Were they going to take Taylor? Were they going to take Tyler? You know, the Boston Bruins didn't have to pick. They just had to take whomever Edmonton didn't. I'd be curious to know if at that time Hall had a preference. Players seldom, if ever, certainly amongst media, will ever discuss where they want to go in the draft. But I wonder.
If I had to guess, I would say that he would have rather gone first overall than to go to a team of his choosing. Like, there's a lot associated with being a first overall draft pick, prestige, money. You know, I think that's probably something that was a priority to him. My really bleak Taylor Hall prediction is that finally he's got to where he wants to be, to a good team like Boston. They sign him to an extension, I don't know, 5 years, whatever it may end up being. And Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand age out, and he's still on a bad team for years to come.
Oh, jeez. You know what, though? Given Taylor Hall's history, it wouldn't surprise anybody. It would not surprise anyone. And you know that Hall's going to score a hat trick tonight, right? Boston's facing Buffalo. How many is it? Is it seven? We should check this. I think all the Buffalo-Boston games are at the back end, which we're at now, of the NHL schedule. Like, I remember when the schedule came out, looking at the Buffalo Sabres schedule and saying, man, they got all these games against Boston late. It's like, if they're going to have any type of playoff hope, they better get there before they have these six or seven games against the Boston Bruins, because their schedule is packed with games against the Boston Bruins. And now, by extension, the Buffalo Sabres schedule is packed with games against Taylor Hall.
Well, there it is then. He's going to light it up for the remainder of the year. We're talking 1.5 points per game. He's going to sign, you know, 5 years times $8.5 million. Bruins are going to be bad after one more year, and there he is.
What'd you make of the Jeff Carter deal? Jeff Carter to Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've talked about this like ad nauseum on this show, but like Crosby and Malkin, you know, they're there. You're going for it. So you could make sense with giving up future assets. And then anytime you can add a guy who shoots the hockey puck in the net and is big veteran guy, I think you're good. You're good going into playoffs. So I like it. Pittsburgh for me they're kind of a sneaky dark horse this year. I've liked them all the way along. They've been better, you know, since they've made the changes there. And boy, now another good addition there. I think Pittsburgh's a dark horse.
Just me, or did it seem overwhelmingly, whether it's, you know, Hall to the Boston Bruins, Mantha to the Washington Capitals, Foligno to the Toronto Maple Leafs, Jeff Carter to the Pittsburgh Penguins, David Savard to the Tampa Bay Lightning, Sam Bennett, Brandon Montour to the Florida Panthers. All the big teams in the East got bodies.
Yeah.
More so than in the West. Like, well, the East loaded up, right?
It seems to be the division with the least clarity, like in terms of who's the best team, who's going to come out of it. Like, it's Colorado and Vegas in their division, full stop. Like, you can't talk me into Minnesota, St. Louis being on that tier with them. You know, I think Toronto is head and shoulders above the other Canadian teams. But, like, that division, between those four teams, it's an absolute pick 'em. I couldn't give you one that I like more than the next.
It is remarkable how you look at, you know, I thought Minnesota was going to do something. I thought Mini was going to do something. I thought Vegas. Now, Vegas was in on Taylor Hall. We'll talk to CJ about this at the bottom of the hour. Vegas was in on Taylor Hall.
How?
Colorado. I know. It's Vegas. I remember talking to someone in Vegas a week and a half ago, and I said, where are you guys at? And he said, where we're at right now is we're not sure if we can beat Colorado. And I said, yeah, but you're capped out. What can you do? And he just sent the text back, it's not really our MO to be quiet at trade deadline.
Yeah. Somehow Vegas has a $181.5 million salary cap. They snuck on an extra 100 mil to everyone else.
Hey, speaking of weird things, does it not feel like the Montreal Canadiens have like a million players under contract right now?
Do they not? You know, just me
or the Habs have everybody?
They have like 12 good defensemen.
They just lost one on waivers in Victor Mete, but it doesn't matter. They have like a million players. Okay, so more trade deadline talk, bottom of the hour with Chris Johnston. The other thing we should get to, what did you make of the Maple Leafs last night against the Montreal Canadiens? Sheldon Keefe was none too impressed with the effort. Jack Campbell, whose winning streak comes to an end, said, you know, essentially place the blame on me. I wasn't as good as I should have been. What did you make of the game last night?
Well, I could do without Jack Campbell hanging himself after every bad performance. You know, like, it's every time he feels like he plays mediocre. I mean, he was fine last night. He made a lot of good saves. He could have made a couple of, maybe stopped a couple, but it was a little dramatic. He said he was embarrassed at his effort or something in the game. It was like, easy, Jack. In general, I thought the effort was
but
not
that's
quite
his story,
there.
Right? Like,
it is, I guess.
That's his story. That's him.
Yeah, I know. He's humble. He'll throw himself in front of the bus for the team. I get it.
Yeah.
But, no, it wasn't exactly there for a Leafs team that did wake up after the second period. One of the more interesting comments I thought was Sheldon Keefe saying about their power play. Someone asked him how much of it is mental, and he said, I'd say it's about 100% right now. Like, they've been outscored 3-1 in their last 36 power plays. The Toronto Maple Leafs. This is the start of the year. We thought they were the world's best power play, so they got some work to do. I'm sure it's awkward for Manny Malhotra in the dressing room right now with Sheldon. I know anytime the power play struggles, he looks at the PP guy and says, "What the hell, man? What's going on?
Give me a goal. Come on, a couple goals here and there. It's a pretty big difference."
Yeah, no, and it is. And so the debate is always, what are your units? And once they're set, how crisp is the execution? Right now, it just looks like there's so much hesitation on the power play and not crisp at all. So I'm sure once a couple go in, things will change. But this is a long run of bad power play for a good team.
I think we're all crossing our fingers, and I haven't checked since we got on the air. Not sure. Do you know if Dave Riddick is starting tonight? I mean, I'm assuming that he is.
It sounds like he is. From Eric Francis tweeted that today was a game day for Riddick when he talked to him. So it sounds quite likely.
Okay, so, I mean, and that's the story y'all want to see. It's, you know, Calgary Flames facing off against the Toronto Maple Leafs. What did you make of the Riddick deal? I just want to get your thoughts really on the totality of what Dubas did, really.
Well, I really support it and like it. I think it makes a ton of sense. There's no guarantee in terms of health of either of their goaltenders. You know, the reason I had been leading up to the deadline, I said that I didn't think they needed to do anything in net, was that they only had so much salary cap space, and I thought if you were going to put it anywhere, you know, it was better allocated somewhere else and just hoping one of those guys was healthy. once the Anderson seems to be not playing until playoffs type thing changed, love the idea of getting Riddick, a guy who can be an NHL goalie, give them at least average goaltending, and someone they trust a little bit more. So I thought they did great filling in a lot of the puzzle pieces, not getting the best players available. It sounds like Taylor Hall may have been willing to come to Toronto, but getting someone who suits them better in terms of defending leads and late in the game and players you trust defensively responsible. So I thought they did a great job filling holes.
They got someone at every position, right? Like, they got the goalie, they got the winger, they got a bottom six forward, a bottom six center in Riley Nash, and the defenseman in Ben Hutton. Because going into trade deadline, wasn't one of the questions that pretty much everybody was talking about is, okay, so this is a good team. You can look for some damage here in the playoffs, but who's defenseman number seven on this team, right?
Yeah. No, that was a very important question. I like the guy they went with too. Like, it's nice to have players who know their role and want to play their role. You know, that long has been the strength of someone that's become beloved here in Zach Hyman, as he just knows what he is. Ben Hutton is a guy who's a bottom pair guy who plays physical and defends as a priority and kills penalties and all these things that, like, you look at the Leafs lineup and you say, that's not what most of their guys do. So the team just feels more versatile and like they can play a variety of different ways. And I don't feel like that's been a strength of theirs in the past.
And Kevin Bieksa mentioned on our coverage yesterday that Ben Hutton may be the happiest person on the face of the earth. He's that proverbial guy. Justin, I'm sure you've had guys like this in the room. Maybe it's been you who doesn't seem to ever have a bad day.
I hope it's been me. I certainly felt like that. I love playing hockey. But yeah, those guys, you need them. You need them because so many guys aren't. And I just think of someone who's a great player and is a really good guy in like Mark Arcabello when he was at the Marlies. Like, we weren't sure what we were going to get every day in terms of positivity. And it changes. You got to tiptoe around a little bit till you find out if today's a good day for them or not. Love when you know what you've got. Joe Thornton has been that for the Leafs so far this year. Those guys, you appreciate the stability in uncertain years.
All right, on that, we'll hit a break. When we come back here on Hockey Central, Chris Johnston from Headlines on Hockey Night in Canada, the NHL on Sportsnet as well. We'll talk about trade deadline and the Maple Leafs. And probably a sort of good little tour maybe around what didn't happen at trade deadline, but may have been close. You know, we talked about Taylor Hall and the Colorado, the Vegas Golden Knights. Was there more out there that just didn't get past the goal line? We'll talk about that next with CJ as he joins us here on Hockey Central. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We're back in a moment. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday, starting at noon, to everyone listening to us on podcast. Thank you for the download. Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Bourne. And before we get to Chris Johnston here from Headlines, here's a headline. Buffalo Sabres, Boston Bruins tonight. And we find Taylor Hall playing on a line with David Krejci. Well, Krejci and Smith with Hall. Also, Curtis Lazar with Wagner and either Corrali or Bleed on that fourth line as the Boston Bruins poised to face off against the Buffalo Sabres later on tonight. One of six on the board tonight around the NHL. CJ's with us now. CJ, how are you, bud?
I'm doing all right. What's going on?
Here's my question. So, you had, leading into trade deadline, 4 hours sleep, you told me, but you also got up early to go for a run, to no one's surprise. When did you get to bed last night?
So I came home and flipped on the Leafs-Habs game, and I fell asleep on the couch.
Attaboy.
I slept through the first two periods of that game, saw the third, and then went to bed. So it was last night was a little bit more sleep than the previous one.
Well, you earned it. I mean, you really did. I thought you and Friedge did a great job on the Trade Breakers desk. Want to get your thoughts on, we'll get into some of the deals that did happen. But you mentioned yesterday on the show that there was some interest or some discussion or something between Vegas and Taylor Hall. And when I mentioned that a couple of moments ago, Justin said, like, do they have $100 million in cap space? Like, what are we missing here? How could Vegas have any interest in Taylor Hall, CJ?
Well, I mean, it didn't happen, obviously. I think that in that case, you were going to require a third team and double salary retention. So you're getting you know, Taylor at 25% of his $8 million cap hit, and you know, obviously would probably involve some other maneuvering from the Golden Knights. I mean, Vegas was had an interest in Ryan Getzlaff too, and you know, obviously a different player than Taylor Hall, but one thing they have in common is a very similar contract status. And so there was going to be a way to do it with some wizardry. You know, they have some guys injured. I know Ryan Reeves got injured, so maybe there was some flexibility there with long-term injury relief, and maybe there's a player going out. You know, I'm not sure how all would have worked from a cap perspective, but certainly that was a real conversation, and it was a real consideration for you know, the Golden Knights, whether, you know, they were going to add Taylor or not.
CJ, maybe you could touch on both these teams for me. They're the two Canadian teams of most interest, that being Edmonton and Winnipeg. I was really disappointed that the Jets, a team that I feel like is close to being there, didn't do much. Sheveldayoff said after that the guys that they wanted or went after didn't move. I don't know if you know anything about what happened with the Winnipeg Jets and also Edmonton. I know their fan base is very upset that more didn't happen given their status as a playoff team this year with a couple of prime age Hart Trophy winners on their team.
Yeah, I know in Edmonton's situation, look, that they have a number of contracts coming up at the end of the season. They're really well positioned to be players in free agency. You know, we'll see what happens with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, for example, who's a pending UFA, and there's been contract talks, you know, going back to even just before this season started. You know, I think that there's some mutual interest in maybe extending their relationship, but, you know, in the flat cap market at place, it's a little different ball game signing free agents. You know, I think that there's almost a game of chicken on both ends of the things, you know, in terms of what an actual value is and comparables and those things. And so, you know, the Oilers were, you know, had two things in mind, that they traded a fair number of picks at last year's deadline. So they didn't have all their picks to be dealing with this time around. And I think they wanted to preserve their ability to be movers in the marketplace in free agency. And really they, you know, they feel they have a lot of depth that, you know, what they need, I think, is sort of another second line player or two. And you know, that just wasn't going to be available to them with where their cap picture is, you know, what they had to trade out. And so that sort of explains a quiet deadline there. I mean, they did want to, you know, get someone to play left shot on their blue line, and were able to do that with the Kulikov move. You know, as for the Jets, you know, that I think, you know, one thing that you know, we've seen them be aggressive in the past. Kevin Sheveldayoff, you know, made a Stastny deal at a trade deadline before a playoff run. You know, traded for Kevin Hayes, you know, 1 year. And you know, I just think that they protect their picks and prospects maybe a little more tightly than other teams would. You know, they're still a smaller market team. You know, we haven't, you know, seen them be a big player in free agency. And so I think that they really, you know, believe in building up their team from within and not relying on bringing players in externally as much as other organizations do. And they've had a lot of success doing it. Obviously, they've drafted very well during their time in the league since moving up from Atlanta. And so, you know, they're maybe a little bit more conservative generally in that regard. And, you know, I guess just, you know, as Kevin Sheveldayoff said, nothing hit. I don't know who else they were swinging on. You know, it wasn't, you know, obviously they were looking for blue line help. But, you know, it wasn't a marketplace full of those players in the end. I mean, we didn't see someone like Matthias Ekholm move, you know, despite all the talk that happened before the deadline. And so, you know, the Jets, I think, are a little bit more patient than other teams, and they like their team too. You know, they feel they can go on a playoff run with what they have, and you know, adding Jordy Benn, and, you know, we'll see what happens now.
Was there one CJ team that you looked at and said, I can't believe they didn't do something? You know, to me, that team is Minnesota. Or is there someone you look at and you say, I thought this team should have done more? Like, I look at Bill Guerin's team, and I know he's trying to, you know, trying to do something different with it, and new direction, etc. I know the upcoming expansion draft is going to give you know, Bill Guerin nightmares, thinking about how he's going to configure his team to make sure he doesn't lose too much. But I look at Minnesota and I say, you know, here's a team that finds itself in third. Are they Colorado? No. Are they Vegas? No. Are they going to go out in the first round? Well, they're either probably going to get Vegas or Colorado. That's where it's definitely trending. But still, I would have thought that, you know, under the spirit of, does the GM give the team a shot in the arm at deadline? I thought for sure that Minnesota had earned one. So Minnesota's my answer, but do you have an answer to which team you're surprised didn't do something or didn't do more?
Yeah, I think Minnesota is a pretty good answer you've come up with there. You know, for me, maybe a team like St. Louis, you know, could have seen them as both a buyer or a seller, given Doug Armstrong's history. And
yeah,
you know, there was a fair bit of smoke on the horizon there about, you know, the potential for both things to play out and the fact that passed quietly. You know, I'd say that's a little bit of a surprise. But, you know, this is such a weird marketplace for all the GMs to operate in. And you know, I know some people don't want to hear that, but it's the truth. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it was the fewest number of players traded on deadline day in 20 years, I think. You know, it's not for lack of trying out there. It's just fly cap environment and was very difficult to navigate for a lot of teams. And, you know, really there weren't that many aggressive buyers. I mean, the Islanders were one ahead of the deadline with the move they made with New Jersey. You know, obviously Kyle Dubas and the Leafs were pretty aggressive in trading a number of draft picks to bolster their team. But, you know, there wasn't a lot of teams out there doing the kind of buying that you're thinking maybe the Wild could have done or even a team like the Blues. And, you know, I do think we're going to get back to more normalcy in future deadlines, especially when there's the prospect of the cap going up, which we don't have right now.
Hmm.
CJ, what are your thoughts on the Detroit Red Wings' performance at the deadline, which you know, saw them bring in multiple draft picks and move out one of the guys who I think many of us considered one of their core players in Anthony Mantha?
I like their deadline. You know, two things are clear there. First of all, the rebuild is going to be even longer than maybe some people would have thought. But I think that's a realistic view of where they're at. You know, Anthony Mantha is 26. And, you know, reasonably, you know, how many productive years does he have left? Truly productive years, you know, maybe two or three or four or five. But you know, it's probably not going to align with the window where they feel like they can compete for a Stanley Cup. And so they took the opportunity to, you know, add a first and second round pick. I think, you know, Jacob Brenna as well is, you know, pretty good price for them. You know, they feel that he can, you know, replace a lot of what Mantha, you know, takes out of their lineup offensively. So, you know, I think that was smart, and also just the way they acted as a, you know, broker in the trade, the Savard trade to pick up another draft pick. I think, you know, that's something that's been talked about as a possibility around the league, and we really haven't seen it happen too much. I know Vegas did it a couple of times. They did it with the Ryan Reeves deal, and they used the Leafs last year at the deadline with Robin Leonard. But, you know, that hasn't happened as much as it did at this deadline. San Jose did a couple trades at this deadline, and, you know, truly this is, you know, teams that, you know, have some extra cap space they don't need for players, you know, turning that into draft picks. And, you know, I think when you're at this stage of the cycle that the Red Wings are, they need as many lottery tickets in the draft as they can get. And you know, I think that they achieve those aims and turn Mantha into, you know, a decent haul of future assets for the organization, you know, which is really where they're training towards, rather than waiting, say, 2 years and making that same decision when his value in the marketplace wouldn't have been as strong.
Have you heard anyone squawking about, Justin and I were talking about this, have you heard of any teams or anyone in the NHL with issue? Listen, we all hear things about, the spirit of the CBA and cap circumvention and, you know, this, you know, third party holding the purse to facilitate deals. Have you heard any or much grousing about it at all, either through teams or the NHL?
I haven't behind the scenes. I saw it on Twitter a little bit. You know, which I don't know how much we should put in that. I mean, to me, it's just a smart use of the system. You know, there's a finite amount of cap space. It ensures that the revenues of the league are split in a specific way, spelled out in the CBA. And if, you know, that cap space then has value. And, you know, I think one of the best things, sort of alterations as the hard cap system has evolved was, you know, allowing teams to retain salary and trade. It's allowed for, you know, a lot more movement to happen in you know, the league. You know, Brian Burke was a big proponent of it, you know, going back 10 or 15 years prior to when you could do it. And, you know, I think that it just makes sense. I mean, I think trades are good for the business of the league. And, you know, the best teams, sure, they get some minor advantage here. You know, if anything, I think there's more concern league-wide about the spirit of the long-term injured reserve rule and you know, whether players are being placed there and, you know, magically returning for game one of the playoffs. And if teams are kind of getting around the cap in that manner more than I think the trades were, you know, you're basically trading a fourth round pick for a team you retain 25% of a certain player's salary for the, the last month of the season. I don't think that's as problematic as the possibility, and I don't have any proof of this happening, but there's certainly sort of the notion in some of my private conversations league-wide that some teams are using LTI to their advantage in a way that the rule really wasn't intended for.
Well, that's a perfect transition then to what about Freddie Anderson? Is he? Do you think he'll play again this season for the Leafs? And like my other thought is like, what happens if he doesn't? If he does, like if he's ready to go in 2 weeks, things suddenly get real tight for them, do they not?
They do, and based on how the Leafs acted in terms of the salary commitments that they've brought on, you know, I think it points to Frederick Anderson not returning in the regular season. You know, the one thing I'll say here, Justin, is, April 13th? He hasn't been on the ice since March 19th, to my knowledge. He certainly hasn't done so when media are allowed in the building, that being, you know, practices, morning skates, that type of thing. And so, you know, even if he were to feel healthy enough to start skating again soon, you know, I think that it's reasonable to expect there'd be a fairly long ramp-up period where he's got to start taking shots again and see how he responds and all those types of things. So, you know, we're getting pretty short on the season as it is. And I don't think that the Anderson situation is one where the Leafs have used this to their advantage. In fact, I think the Leafs would tell you they think their best two goaltenders are Frederick Anderson and Jack Campbell, and they would much prefer to enter the playoffs with both those guys healthy and playing well and able to play games. And it just isn't clear right now whether Anderson's going to be able to do that. And so, you know, I don't know how this one plays out, but I would say it's unlikely we see him play again in the regular season. You know, I do think that there's some work being done behind the scenes to have him ready for the playoffs, and with the idea that, you know, most teams that play a lot of playoff games end up using a couple goaltenders. And so this is a really hard one to handicap. It's sort of draped in a degree of mystery here. You know, Frederick Anderson played injured, you know, right before he went out finally in March. And, you know, I think entering a year where he's going to be a free agent, you know, he almost did that selfishly for the team because Jack Campbell's injured at that point in time. And I think now might be a time for him, I wouldn't call it being selfish, but to put his own interests first and to make sure that he's back 100% before he plays again, because, you know, he's entering a summer where he's going to be a free agent and needs to make sure he can extend his career.
Have about 30 seconds for this one, but the Montreal Canadiens. Justin and I were talking about how, listen, we know teams are only allowed to carry 50 contracts. That's the CBA, but it feels like Montreal has about 70 guys they can draw from. Your thoughts on Marc Bergevin?
Well, he's got a lot of blue line options now. You know, look, I think that the Canadiens are a dangerous team in the playoffs because they don't have necessarily the high-end skill of whoever they play, whether it's the Leafs or someone else, but they got a lot of depth through their lineup. And if Jake Allen plays well, you know, I could see them, you know, being built for playoff hockey. So I like where their team's at. You know, they do have sort of a different composition on the blue line, a lot more, you know, bigger physical players that I think are, you know, built to play playoff hockey. And,
right.
You know, whatever the standings say, I don't think it's going to be just so easy once we get to the playoffs. I think the Canadiens are going to be a very difficult out for whoever faces them.
Absolutely. Great work yesterday. Glad you got some rest. Finally, well-deserved. You earned your pillow. You earned your pillow yesterday, CJ. Thanks for stopping by today.
Well, same to you, Jeff. You were directing traffic. I feel like I had nothing to do compared to you. So
I was just trying to make sure we had enough tissue for Christopher Stieg's nose. He got the bust a leak to start the program yesterday.
I will never forget that. Usually those days pass in a blur, but that's like my most memorable moment of yesterday. So
100%. That's the only thing I'm going to take away from trade deadline. Like all of it. Like, I just remember looking over at Christopher Stieg and seeing that he's cut a leak to start the show. Spectacular. Great stuff, CJ. As always, thanks for stopping by, pal.
All right, guys. Yeah.
There he is, Chris Johnston from Headlines. We are up against it. Quick break and probably have a tour around the games going on in the NHL this evening. That's when Hockey Central returns. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to the program. Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Bourne. And Bourne, a few things to go over for tonight. The Boston Bruins and the Buffalo Sabres. Taylor Hall playing on a second line with David Krejci. We all see where this is going tonight, right?
Yeah, it seems inevitable. By the way, David Krejci has to be just loving life. I mean, He's been toiling on that second line while those three superstars played on the first line. Now he gets a little bit of talent infusion on his line, too. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Speaking of that top line, Brad Marchand is one goal away from his eighth consecutive 20-goal season.
Man does not deserve enough love for sort of reimagining himself, you know, from a pest, yeah, as he said, at the start of his career and a guy who would get in trouble to now a guy who gets Hart Trophy votes every year. What an unbelievable star in this league he is.
Spectacular player, no doubt, regardless of how you feel about him. Maple Leafs taking on the Calgary Flames. Tough one effort-wise, results-wise for the Maple Leafs against the Montreal Canadiens yesterday. What do you look forward to tonight? Dave Riddick versus his old team.
Yeah, I guess just a bounce back. It's, you know, you can kind of feel like when you get everything you want in free agency, I could imagine you could get a little bit comfortable and just imagine things are going to be easy. Let's see if they're able to find their work ethic and make things work for them with some of their new guys in the lineup tonight.
Tampa Bay Lightning face off against the Nashville Predators as well. Nashville wants to grab that fourth and final playoff spot, and no one seems to want to challenge them. They add, well, that's the weird thing. We were sitting here, like, what, 5 minutes ago saying, everyone's getting traded from the Nashville Predators. And then at the end of all of it, they're adding Eric Gudbranson.
Yeah, like Chicago sold a couple of players, and apparently Nashville wants to go in the other direction. Good for them for making a push. I like teams that try to win.
The thing is about Nashville, like, they didn't have to do anything. They only have two expiring contracts in Holla and Granlund, can probably bring one of or both back if they want. And everybody else still has term. Like, I know
it's not
weird.
A great thing when your team's not very good, though.
I understand selling tickets, though. I do understand selling tickets for the following season. Real quick, Florida Panthers and the Dallas Stars. How about what Zito's done to redo this Florida Panthers team? Holy smokes.
Yeah, he's put a little bit of nastiness.
Yeah, I mean, Sam Bennett, I mean, not that Brandon Montour is going to scare anybody, but Sam Bennett sure will.
Yeah,
the Panthers should.
In the offseason, love it.
Hockey Central, back on Thursday, by the way.